Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now available on our website, a page for every county in our listening area for your anecdotal census. It's a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. As the official census takers make their rounds from now through the summer to collect those 10 question forms, we are collecting your stories of change in our communities over the last decade. So go to our website and post your stories and observations of how life in your community is different today from the way it was in 2000. Who's coming? Who's going? How have the economy or values or politics changed in your community? Join us in creating your anecdotal census, a people's history of our area from 2000 to 2010. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you will see the pages for your local area, your locality, and the counties, all the counties in our area. Well, with me now is Fred Kaplan, war stories columnist for Slate.com and author of books including 1959, The Year That Changed Everything. Fred has written some observations on Slate about the Times Square case that relate to Dick Cheney, Jane Jacobs, and our growing comfort with being under constant video surveillance. Hi, Fred. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And let's start, and I think we'll talk mostly about the ubiquity of video cameras now. Mm-hmm. What did we learn, in your opinion, about the extent of surveillance from this case?
Well, when I wrote this column, everybody was still looking for the white man in his 40s who was seen walking away from the van. That turned out to be a dead end. But, you know, apparently there was a camera in a shopping mall where this guy took a test drive of the van, and the police went and looked at that camera, and he could be seen very clearly in the car. So, you know, I think, look, there are privacy concerns that I understand, but I think it is now pretty well understood that when you are out in public, things are no longer private, and anybody who assumes otherwise is kidding himself. There are in lower Manhattan alone something like 4,500 cameras, and you know I don't know too many people who have a problem with this.
So, listeners, this has been a big issue in New York in times past. The ACLU certainly has rallied against this, railed against this kind of ubiquitous video surveillance, filed some lawsuits with particular legal challenges to being seen in public in certain circumstances by video cameras. What do you think? Is this just a non-issue now? Do you want fewer video cameras, or do you want more video cameras? If anything, you know, some of the news coverage in the last few days have been people complaining that there wasn't enough video set up to really blanket the Times Square area so they could see more clearly that guy who was the original person of interest or anyone else. So is this something on which you've changed? Listeners, did this used to be an affront and now it's a right? Or how do you see this for your own civil liberties? 212-433-WNYC. Is it civil liberties versus your own security? 212-433-9692. Fred, what did you want to say?
Well, I noticed that the current lawsuit by the New York Civil Liberties Union is not calling for an elimination or a ban or even a restriction. It's calling for information. They want to know how much this system costs, how long the footage is kept, who's looking at them, who's guarding the guardians. It's those kinds of questions of oversight. It's no longer even dealing with the existence of the cameras themselves.
Let's take a call. Greg in Huntington. Greg, you're on WNYC. Hi, Greg.
Hi, love your show.
Thank you.
I think we're now asking the federal government to spend more money, to give us more money for cameras. Why don't the billionaires of New York, like Wall Street and Trump and Bloomberg and all those guys, why don't they just write the check? It's probably only $50 to $100 million to put cameras on every corner. And they're so wealthy, and that's the way Wall Street could also give back to the city.
Greg, thank you. And Fred, you know, there is really a private-public or public-private security camera network. That's part of what they were going through in Times Square after the attempted bombing. Many of the cameras are actually private in spaces in hotels and other kinds mm-hmm. of buildings in the area, as well as the public ones. Well, so there is this kind of public-private patchwork. And another issue there, I think, is that the NYPD did not, you know, it doesn't seem to be as well coordinated as some people would like.
Well, you know, some people have this notion, you know, that the CIA is so powerful they can, you know, watch every bird die in Central Park. Nobody is going to, even if it were more pervasive, nobody is going to be able to watch this stuff in real time, you know? I mean, it mainly is used for post-talk kinds of analysis. And in that sense, as a deterrent, if you think that you might be caught on video camera, you might not do something. You know, have you seen this 20-minute compilation of all the security camera footage from the Mossad assassination of the Hamas leader in Dubai?
No.
It's incredible. You can find it on the website. Security cameras were tracking this assassination attempt, well, not attempted, it worked, but from step one, from beginning to end, people going into hotel rooms, coming out wearing disguises, going into the parking garage, coming out of the parking garage, it was like watching a movie. Every single step of this murder was captured on videotape.
And to the caller's point about billionaires and other rich people paying for this, I mean, I guess you could make the argument that you could break out any piece of public policy that costs money, whether it's education or security cameras or whatever, and ask for wealthy individuals to make private donations, they would probably say, you know, we're taxed more than anybody else, so our money is going to this as well as everything else the government does.
I think also some of these cameras are paid by business improvement districts, which are private entities.
Bridget in Manhattan is not entirely comfortable with this trend. Hi, Bridget.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, what are you thinking?
I think it's horrifying. I think it's a bad idea. I think Times Square, frankly, is an absolute mess with the streets blocked off and people just loitering. And I think the whole concept of having that street like that, thinking that it's going to encourage business and people to shop, you can't force people to spend what they don't have. And I've observed that a lot of time people are just down there sitting. They're not necessarily shopping. If they have a drink in their hand, that's, you know, that's pushing it. And I mean, like, for instance, I was down there. This is the third incident that has happened in Times Square. Think about it. I think this year I was down there catching the bus about 2 weeks ago before the little mayhem happened, if mm-hmm. you recall. And ironically, I was talking to my brother on the bus and on the phone, and I just felt that something was getting ready to happen. And I told him, I said, you know what, it's too many police down here, it's too many youngsters down here, and something's not right, let me get off the phone, focus. I started walking home.
Was that Easter night?
The cameras. This is my thing. Mm-hmm. With so many police standing on the corner, with guns, with firepower, and then you have military people sometimes on those corners with machine guns, it's a recipe for disaster for innocent people.
Bridget, I'm going to leave it there and get some other folks on. Thank you very much. Also not comfortable with this is Paul in Brooklyn. Paul, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Yep. I mean, I think this whole culture of observation is ridiculous. The whole see something, say something. I mean, you've got people in watch your neighbor. So you got people looking at each other like they're criminals. This is not the way we go in society. I feel we need to solve the root of these problems. Stop watching what's going on and start, you know, I mean, there's major issues. There's an environmental disaster. People aren't talking about this.
Of course,
one of the
vendors who tipped off the police, because the vendors were the first to see, these couple of vendors were the first to see the car smoking.
Right.
He said, see something, say something. And, you know, I'm not sure that bomb was constructed well enough to have actually gone off, but let's say that it was. See something, say something worked in that case.
Okay, well, look, I mean, this is a general principle. Of course, look, if you see something going on and you know, and it's going to be a benefit to society to warn somebody and help people, yeah, I mean, you have to do it. I just mean there is this culture of, you know, of fear, basically. We have to observe things. We have to monitor everything. We ought to watch every minute. And I think it's the wrong psychological approach for the coming age. I think we need to move into really attack the root of these problems, you know?
Thank you, Paul. Maurice in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Maurice.
Hi, Brian. Love your show.
Thank you.
My problem here is with the fact that the American Civil Liberties Union, who has been a friend of the American people, is now turning against them for the last few years. And I also love the fact that there are cameras all over, and I want people to know that nobody is watching them unless something happens. I mean, nobody is sitting there and watching you go through the street and do whatever you have to do. The problem is when something does happen, the cameras do help, and I believe in them.
Thank you for your call. And, Fred, I guess that's...
Yeah, can I just say, I mean, it's these people talking about their climate of fear and people looking at each other. I mean, do these people really live in this city? I mean, this is nuts. You know, this goes back, you mentioned Jane Jacobs. Jane Jacobs, in her great 1961 book, The Death and Life of Great American Cities, said that the virtue of a mixed-use neighborhood with lots of people out and about all the time, one of the virtues, besides the sheer and intrinsic pleasure of it, is that you do have eyes on the street. It makes it a safer block. Jane Jacobs would not have been surprised in the least that this incident, that the smoking van was first spotted by two street vendors who have their eyes on the street all the time. This is a virtue of a great American city. This isn't a climate of fear. I mean, you know, I take the subways all the time. I know you do, too. If you see a suspicious bag and you go tell a cop about it, that doesn't mean that you're hovering in fear, cowering in fear all the time. No, you have common sense. This is what living in a community in the modern era, and not just in the age of terrorism, but in the age of any kind of crime, is all about.
Although you know that historically there would be some groups in society more than others who may be victimized, even when innocent, by the large police presence the corner, as the one caller said, or the constant video surveillance and looking furtively at those people around you, as the other caller said.
Well, that's true, but, you know, I think whatever you think of broken windows theories and that sort of thing, I think something undeniable, a big transformation in crime fighting in this city came when Jack Maple, under Bill Bratton, instituted the CompStat system, which had kept daily statistics on where crimes were occurring and then moved police to deploy them in those areas where crimes had been spurting. Up until that point, statistics were gathered on a quarterly basis. You know, it was impossible for the police to systematically respond to what was going on.
We are over time already, but I want to sneak in John in Westchester, who's a detective and has a thought about video surveillance that may be a little counterintuitive. John, thanks so much for calling in.
No problem. The one point I want to make is that people have to understand the video camera as a tool is fantastic, but all it gives us is that brief 2-second window of when somebody or something passes in front of a camera lens. It doesn't solve the case.
Mm-hmm.
It backs it up. And the IDs that you can get from a camera are almost worthless. You can't have people can't, as everybody saw from the footage that was released over the weekend, there's no way to get a positive ID on one of those people walking down the street. All it does is give us a little glimpse of an incident from that almost like a blindfolded look, you know, a horse with blinders on it on the racetrack. It gives us that little, that very limited look. And if you piece them together, you get a good idea of a timeline. But in terms of having this all-intrusive video system that's going to poke into people's lives, I think people are very misunderstood on that.
John, thank you for those insights. And Fred, just real quick, we're not going to have time to really explore that other third of your article, which is Dick Cheney is once again wrong. But just real briefly on that, you're saying he's wrong in framing this as that we should be in a war mode rather than a criminal justice mode. But I did notice that the police did not immediately read Faisal Shahzad his Miranda rights so that they could question him in a certain way, I guess, about other possible terrorist acts that might have been in the planning.
Yeah, there is an exemption where you don't have to read them, but then they did read them to him, and he kept responding to questions, apparently. But what I meant, this was, you know, Cheney said, look, it is a war. It is a war on terrorism. There is a military dimension. But Cheney was beating up on President Obama for emphasizing law enforcement at all. And this case shows, as do many others, that, you know, look, there's a terrorism is planned by people who want to make war against us, but terrorist acts are crimes, and they are often discovered, preempted, punished, captured through classic law enforcement techniques.
And there we leave it.
That was the case here.
And there we leave it with Fred Kaplan, who writes the War Stories column for Slate. Fred, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And speaking of Times Square, we will talk to WNYC transportation reporter Andrea Bernstein next.